How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for our new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
It is Locked On NBA. I'm David Locke, host of Locked On NBA, founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. Biggest stories in the NBA covered by the local experts. Carmelo Anthony to the Thunder. What's the reaction in New York? We'll get that from the host of Locked On Knicks. What's the reaction in Oklahoma City? That will come from the host of Locked On Thunder. And then exclusive to the Locked On NBA show, we will have the Scout, an NBA scout who comes on and gives us the breakdown of how he sees the Thunder playing with Carmelo. That's all what's coming up on today's edition of Locked On NBA. It is brought to you by our good friends at SeatGeek. SeatGeek's been amazing, the Locked On Podcast Network, continual support of us the whole way through, and it's the reason I'm so happy, because they're a great product for you to use. Here's why you should be using SeatGeek and why I use it. One, it's easy. It's on your phone. You just tap on the app and there it is for you. The little blue thing with the white seat. Boom. Right on your screen. Then you get whatever event you want to go to. It tells you all of the various ticket options from all the different various tickets that are out there. You don't have to hunt around. And then finally, it gives you a ticket score on each of those so you know which one is the best value. If you want to go on the road to a concert, if you're going to be traveling, want to see an NBA game this year, you can put in a price alert and set an event to keep a tab on it. And then when you buy it, it is secured and to your phone immediately and there for you. That's why I use SeatGeek, why you should as well. And here's the best part about it. When you use the promo code LOCKED, LOCKED, you get $20 rebate on your first purchase. That's promo code LOCKED. And you get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. All right, let's get going. The biggest stories in the NBA from the local experts, only on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today's edition of Locked On NBA, Carmelo joins the Thunder.
You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Start the story in New York, where Carmelo has finally departed. James Marcida is the host of Locked On Knicks, does a fabulous job, has some great shows this summer on being a Knicks fan that live people up. And James, all right, the saga is over. Isolating just this whole recent saga from Phil and Carmelo fighting to Perry trying to fix it, and it's not fixable. Did it end well, badly for the Knicks? What's your feeling?
I think it ended about as well as it could. It really would have been a distraction above and beyond what would have been worth it to keep Melo around, especially given when you look at the packages that other teams have gotten for some really top stars, including, you know, Melo's new teammate, Paul George. The market's just not there for someone in Melo's position. So the Knicks moved on from Melo. They didn't take back any long-term contracts. You know, Cantor's got 2 years if he opts in for his player option next year. McDermott's only got 1 year left. And they got a second-round draft pick from the Bulls, who, you know, that figures to be a good one because they don't figure to be a very good team this year. So a lot of Knicks fans are, like, bummed. They're like, this is all we got for Carmelo. Oh, my God. But realistically, they weren't going to get much more. The timing was right before the season, fresh start. Chris Stapps era, let's see what he can do. And I'm, you know, not thrilled about it. I wish Carmelo's era could have ended on a more positive note. But like you said, given where we are, I'm happy with the job that Perry and Mills did.
How do you think the Carmelo era will be remembered?
I was talking about this. I've been talking about this with a bunch of people recently. And I think it'll really be remembered for being complicated. He's had some truly, you know, great individual play, hasn't been able to mesh it that well with team success. A lot of that is on his shoulders. Way more of that is on the Knicks management shoulders. You know, they had the one good season in 2012-13 when they got to the second round of the playoffs. Obviously, it wasn't what anyone wanted when they started this thing. It's just going to be remembered as really complex, I think. I think it could be colored a lot by what happens in the next couple of years. If he does, you know, somehow wrestle a championship away from Golden State, that's going to really change the way that, you know, people look at his tenure in New York. I think they'll, at that point, you know, say they just didn't put the right team around him. But I think right now his legacy is one of just being complicated.
So how do we isolate, or is it impossible to isolate, James Dolan misfunction, dysfunction, disaster?
Right.
Phil Jackson dysfunction, disaster, and Carmelo's limitations?
I think you can just look at a couple of key moments, I think. And I think what it comes down to is that they're all almost equally to blame. When Melo got to the team, he could have been a free agent and come that offseason and not have the Knicks gut their team for him. But he pushed the issue. He wanted to make sure that his contract was locked in. This was before the collective bargaining agreement was about to expire. He didn't know what was coming. Possibly he wouldn't make as much money. So he made a decision that had real consequences. On the other hand, the Knicks made that decision too. Dolan famously stepped in and offered way more than Donnie Walsh was willing to offer at that time for Carmelo Anthony. If Dolan's, you know, extreme misfunction hadn't kicked in and he just let his GM do his job, then, you know, Melo would have come to the Knicks with a much better roster. And so right off the bat, it's kind of everyone having, you know, adding their piece to the puzzle of misfortune and disaster. It kind of seemed like maybe it wasn't going to work out when he re-signed. There were some reports that he regretted not signing with Chicago when he got that second contract with the Knicks. On the other hand, Phil Jackson looked at the landscape, brought him back gladly, gave him the no-trade clause, which made trading him a lot harder. And we did see that in 2012-13, with a nice, solid team around him, including, you know, Jason Kidd and his last year. Unfortunately, he fell apart in the playoffs. He just forgot how to make a three-pointer. But in the regular season, they were a very good team. So you did see that it was possible that perhaps they could have built a team around Carmelo that really could have competed. Unfortunately, due to some decisions made by everyone involved, it didn't happen. I think the most dysfunctional decisions were made by the Knicks because ultimately they're the ones who said yes or no. But Carmelo made a number of decisions himself that didn't necessarily help his time in New York either.
You know, it's really interesting to what you just said, James, is if you go back through the history of the NBA, in almost every circumstance, you can look at trades and just decide the team that had the best player, got the best player, got the best of the trade, right? So if you go to the Barkley deal and and Carmelo deal may be the opposite. Carmelo deal may be one of those cases where simply too much talent went to Denver. They've been a better franchise than the Knicks have since Carmelo. They've been a better franchise in many ways, in many ways since they were with Carmelo. That Denver actually got the better end of that deal, which would be, you know, very different than what we've seen kind of traditionally in these circumstances.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that was kind of like, you know, the case study that would have been in the textbook about how to run an NBA franchise for, you know, usually getting the best player is the optimal outcome, but not always, and you can go too far. And I think part of the problem with his tenure is that they overestimated just how valuable he could be with the pared-down roster, which isn't to say that he wasn't an extremely valuable player, but he didn't bring quite as much as they thought he was going to. I think a lot of that's on the defensive end of the court, where he doesn't affect that game the same way someone like LeBron can. And this isn't to, you know, there's a lot of, in Knicks circles, like, people get pretty angry at each other over whether, you know, these arguments have now been long settled over whether or not he's as good as LeBron. But at the time, it was more of a thing people would talk about. And that's the kind of haul that they gave up to get him. And he's just not that kind of player. And that's not his fault, but he's not someone who's going to single-handedly drag a 30-win team to 45-50 wins.
So now we get to the question, from your perspective, having watched him as a Knick and watched him more closely recently, what's your guess on what he's able to do with this roster that includes Westbrook and Paul George?
It'll be really interesting. I'm really excited to see it. Obviously, these three are all super high-usage guys in the NBA. You know, they're all used to being the man. Obviously, the thing that everyone always talks about with Carmelo is he played great on the Olympics, where he was unquestionably not the lead dog, not the, you know, first guy they went to on the offense. And, you know, Westbrook and George are both, you know, so tremendous that I don't think he'll have any issue deferring to them. But I think it'll be a little bit complicated at first, the same way, you know, Wade and LeBron wanted to make it work, but that first season was a little rockier trying to kind of navigate those waters. I'm really interested to see how they'll go. I definitely don't think Melo is going to cause any kind of problem in the locker room, where my touches, nothing like that. He's going to be really motivated to make it work and to be a good teammate and to fit in there, I think.
Do you think he can play third fiddle?
Yeah, I do. I think with these guys, I really do. He's just been beaten down so much in New York the past couple of years. I think he's going to have kind of a renewed sense of joy going over there, being on a team that wins. You know, he's kind of stubborn. He's not my favorite Knick, but he does want to win, you know. And he famously, you know, in the series against Boston a couple of years ago, passed to Jared Jeffries for a last-second shot because he was open. This kind of thing, and Jared Jeffries missed the layup. Carmelo's shown a willingness to defer. I think his style of offense can be a problem in a team concept sometimes, but I don't think he's got that like innate selfishness and just like, I got to get mine. But I think he can be stubborn about, this is how I get mine and this will be good for the team. But maybe sometimes he should learn to, you know, move the ball a little bit quicker.
Final question for you about Carmelo. No way to have a definitive answer. He obviously could opt in, and then he's in Oklahoma City for a second season. But what's your guess on what his next destination is in the NBA?
That's almost impossible to say. I mean, I really do think he's motivated to win and to play with his friends. Luckily, his friends are some of the best players in the league, you know, mainly LeBron. I think a lot could depend on where LeBron goes. If LeBron goes to the Lakers and there's some room there for Melo, I think he could really do that. I don't think he'll be so motivated by money next year, but his track record says that he has been. I mean, he's made so much now, so I think that could change. But it wouldn't surprise me if he, you know, opted in or tried to get some sort of, you know, extension just to, like, max out his last big contract. If I had to go with my gut, I would say he sees where LeBron goes and not goes there no matter what, but we'll have a like real serious think about going there and playing with him and seeing if that's a good enough squad around him to win a championship. So I guess my gut is like, number one, he wants to win, and if he can combine that with playing with like his guys and if they're still playing at that same level, he's going to try to make that happen.
James, thanks so much. Catch James on Locked on Knicks, the local angle on the biggest stories, giving perspective you can't get anywhere else. It's the Locked On Podcast Network. James, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, David.
Now let's go to Oklahoma City, continuing to get the local angle on the biggest stories. And we go to Carson Cunningham, the host of Locked on Thunder. And I know you just left Media Day. This has to be as stunning a few months as getting the franchise for the people in Oklahoma City.
Absolutely, David. I mean, today was Media Day was an absolutely surreal experience. I mean, just to see Hall of Famers walking up and down the hallway, you know, obviously Russell Westbrook we're used to, but then you see Paul George obviously in a Thunder uniform, and then Carmelo Anthony. I mean, this is just an unbelievable experience. And you're right, you go all the way back to when they got the franchise, and to think where this franchise is now, David, with three all-star caliber players. And if you go all the way back to when they got the Thunder, the fans of Oklahoma City, their first love were the Oklahoma City Hornets. They had fallen in love with Chris Paul. And just to see the transformation of this city into an NBA city with their own franchise, obviously they fell in love with Kevin and Russ at first. But now, David, to go to Media Day and to see that caliber of superstars walking around was surreal. And even as I was working and covering the event, I just kind of looked around every other minute or so and just go, God, this is really happening. This is bizarre. So it was a surreal day for sure.
When you look at the big picture approach here, is this all because Russ hasn't signed? Is this because talent was just so available you have to go get it? What do you think is driving Oklahoma City right now?
Well, I think having Russ, first and foremost, you don't get Paul George without that. I mean, I think you could make a trade for him, but I don't think you have any hopes of keeping him without Russell Westbrook. But the trade Sam Presti made to get Paul George made this all possible, right? I don't think Carmelo Anthony comes here unless he has two superstars to play with. That to me was the driving force. Now, obviously, you mentioned Russell's not signed, Paul George is not going to be signed, and neither is Carmelo. So there's a lot of uncertainty for one season. But I think what you have here is three superstars who have done everything you can in basketball besides win an NBA championship. And I think they're putting that first and foremost in their minds. I mean, Paul George is saying all the right things about this being a place to win a championship. And I thought Carmelo did a great job of that today, too. He kept using the phrase, I'm a product of my environment. I think he was referencing how he played in New York. He kept shooting down any notions he wouldn't play the four or work together with these two guys. So I think the driving force behind all of this is three guys trying to band together and go win a championship. And obviously that means going through the Warriors. And I think that's their intention.
Isolating this move, I love where Oklahoma City stood before this move. I thought they were the fourth best team, at least in the Western Conference, maybe better than San Antonio if they ever fall off, but I'm not going to bet on it. I thought they were considerably ahead of that next tier of teams, the Clippers and the Nuggets and that group. I'm not entirely convinced that they made a big jump with this move. Do you think they did?
I do. I mean, because during the regular season, do I think they're going to win 70 games? No, I don't. But I think when you get into a playoff series, the assets they gave up in Enes Kanter and Doug McDermott literally were unplayable against teams like the Rockets and Warriors, and maybe less so against the Spurs since they play a little bigger. But now with Carmelo playing him at the four alongside Paul George and Russell Westbrook with the other pieces they've added this offseason, I thought Paul George said it best. He goes, I liked my team before this trade. He goes, now we're on a different level. And I tend to agree with that. Look, Carmelo Anthony's not what he once was, but he's still an elite NBA basketball player. Is he, you know, a top 10 player in the league? Absolutely not. But he unlocks a lot of different options for Billy Donovan as well to play small. And I just think the overall talent jump from Enes Kanter and Doug McDermott to Carmelo Anthony is hard for me to ignore. And I see a tough time for the Spurs or Rockets matching them. Obviously, everyone's chasing the Warriors, but I do. I disagree. I think this jumps them a notch or two above where they were before adding Carmelo.
Do you think the ball moves?
Well, that's what we got to see, right? And I think they're banking on, you know, how those guys play together in the Olympics. Now, going up against Macedonia or whoever they're playing in the Olympics is a lot different than going up against the Western Conference. But I think they're banking on three supremely talented players working together in play. And that was the notion people had, too, with the Warriors, right? Is there enough basketballs on that team? And it took them a few months of the NBA season to kind of figure it all out and figure their roles. And I think that's what's going to happen here. I think early on, it's going to be a huge adjustment for Carmelo Anthony playing off the ball a little bit more with Russell Westbrook. But I think overall, you put those three caliber of talents together, I think they tend to figure it out. And I think that's what the Thunder's banking on, and I think that's what's going to happen.
Just to make sure I explain myself a little bit, one of my big things I believe in is that players have to be above average in their possession usage. Then if you use a bunch of possessions and you're above average, then you're Steph Curry and Kevin Durant and you really change games. And I have a statistic that I have kept myself called PAC, points above average created. So the concept is that 3 years ago, Carmelo Anthony was using 23, 24 possessions a night in a game. And he was actually 0.2 points below what an average player would do in the league, or five average players each used, you know, four possessions. He was less good. And let me just, and I bring this up for this reason. And some of this can be product of his environment. But I also think his game is maybe a little more flawed than some people realize. So when you look at him in the 13-14 season, he was a positive one PAC. The next year, he was a minus 0.2. In 15-16, he was a minus 0.5. And in 16-17 last season, he was a minus 0.7. So there has been a considerable fade of his efficiency in the last 4 years. And we'll just see how that plays out. But that's just to make sense of why I just am not sure that I like him using the other possessions from other players when he's not as efficient as they are.
Well, it's a fair criticism for sure. And that's been probably the biggest knock on Carmelo is he has, you know, just swallowed the basketball whole, and the results have not been nearly as good as they were, as you mentioned, back in 2013. I kind of equated it to Kevin Durant going to the Warriors. This is a much greater degree of jump in talent as far as teammates are concerned. Kevin had to work a lot harder in Oklahoma City than he's had to work at Golden State. And I think the same, you can carry that over to Carmelo going to play with the guys he was playing with in New York don't look anything like Russell Westbrook and Paul George. So while I do think he's become a much less efficient player, I think the team around him will allow him to be a little bit more effective when he has the ball. But you're right. These are very real concerns and right points to bring up is, can Carmelo change his ways? Can you teach an old dog new tricks? And I think, you know, the mythical status of Olympic Melo is what you have to look to, him playing with other superstars. Now, will we see anything close to Olympic Melo in Oklahoma City? That's the biggest question, no doubt. And I think that's what Sam Presti's banking on, is these guys coming together with one goal of winning a championship and putting all the other, you know, my turn, your turn, my shot, your shot behind them and trying to play together as a team.
So the worst case scenario here is that these three guys are all just auditioning to play together in L.A. next year, right?
Yeah, right. That's the doomsday scenario, is they're all just kind of having a semester away in Oklahoma City before they go start college with the Lakers. But I think that's a risk that Sam Presti was willing to take. I think when Russell sat down with Sam Presti last summer when he signed his extension, he said, look, Sam, I know Kevin left for nothing. This year I'm going to play my heart out, but you better get me some help. And I think Sam Presti's done all he reasonably can do. And if Russell wants to go play in L.A., he's going to go play in L.A. Same with Paul George. But I do caution people in this Paul George is going to L.A. no matter what. If this team reels off 60 wins and is second in the West and plays the Warriors in a great series in the Western Conference Finals, is he really going to want to go play with, you know, Brandon Ingram and those guys over there, or form another super team over at LA? I don't know. That's a huge gamble by Sam Presti, but it's one I'd be willing to take. And I think more than anything, Paul George and Carmelo Anthony, they haven't had a real opportunity, a true opportunity to win a championship in their career. I mean, I know Paul George was the number one seed in the East. They weren't beating LeBron, and they definitely weren't beating the team out of the West. Same with Carmelo. He's made one conference finals. So these are two guys that have reached a point in their career where they've made it. They've made all the money they can. They've been franchise players. Now they want to go win. And I think that to me will be the overriding factor. But you're right. I think if Russell doesn't sign his extension, David, and all three of these guys go into this season unsigned, there's going to be a lot of nervous people in Oklahoma City, no doubt about it.
But it'd be a heck of a run. If in fact it's the end of the run, it's a heck of a run.
The chips are in the center of the table, David. Yeah. They're all in. They have no buyback. The chips are in the center of the table.
It is certainly remarkable. Carson, thank you very much. Carson Cunningham, host of Locked On Thunder, giving you a local angle on the biggest stories as only the Locked On Podcast Network can. Make sure you subscribe to him at Locked On Thunder. The perspective from New York, the perspective from Oklahoma City, both unique to the Locked On Podcast Network and Locked On NBA. Now let's get where we're most unique, and that's the scout. NBA scout, hired by an NBA team on an NBA payroll, comes on our show anonymously and gives us his breakdown of how this all looks. So, scout, what was your reaction to actually, let me back up, scout. What was your reaction to Paul George and Russell Westbrook together?
My initial reaction was a little surprised, but I felt like those two could probably play together and have some success. But I still didn't see them as a team that was going to be really dangerous in the West.
But then,
but now,
the next thing happened.
Yes. So, just for interest, you saw them as not dangerous in the West. I had them as the fourth best team in the West before this deal. So I had Houston, San Antonio out of respect, Golden State above them, but I had them above the Clippers, above Denver, above Minnesota. Did you agree with me, or did you have them in a different slot there?
That's probably accurate. That's probably accurate. I shouldn't have said not dangerous. I didn't see them as a Western Conference Finals team, you know, with that addition.
With the addition of Carmelo Anthony, how do you view them?
Number one, I think they will be exciting to watch most nights. I do think that Carmelo gives them an opportunity to make a run at the Western Conference Finals. Whether or not that will happen, well, that remains to be seen. But they're definitely a scary team now. But like most people in the NBA, we're wondering how it's all going to come together because of how each individual star plays. They are isolation basketball players. And most of their points are generated in isolation.
So one of the talking points has been, I don't know how it'll work in the regular season, but you get them into the postseason and you have to have that isolation ability. Do you buy that?
Well, I do think you have to have it or you need it in the playoffs, but you also need to have ball movement and somebody that can make a shot on the perimeter consistently. There's also that defensive piece that you have to have.
All right, let's talk about the offense first. We'll get to defense in a second. These are three guys are predominantly isolation. The game is going to a huge amount of ball movement. Do you see this as a team that moves the basketball or a team that just goes and finds mismatches almost the way Carlisle used to in Dallas, where he just found a mismatch and he pounded it until you reacted?
Well, I believe, and I could be totally off, I believe they're going to try to start off trying to move the ball and pass it around and make it sound good for the media. We have this ball moving offense, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, each guy is going to get their opportunity to isolate and score one-on-one. But the problem is going to come when one person is getting it more than the other two.
Do you see one of them getting left out in any way?
I do. I think that could be Paul George. Unless he finds ways to score off the ball or off cuts and maybe getting points in transition, and he doesn't strike me as an offensive rebounder. So I think Paul George could be that guy that gets the least amount of shots because we know Russell's going to dominate the ball. We know that Carmelo is going to pound the ball on the block and on the mid post area, and on the wing. So, I mean, that leaves Paul George hanging.
What's interesting to that to me, Scout, is of all these guys, I think Westbrook's got his MVPs established. Carmelo's really got to win. That's what he needs to be established. Paul George is the one who's not established yet. He's the one who I think could be most easily uncomfortable with this arrangement. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
No, I totally agree. I mean, he's the odd man out. I just don't know. He's accustomed to having the ball in his hands and taking a lot of shots. And the good thing is all three are versatile ball handlers. They can all handle in pick and roll and score in pick and roll. Now, how Billy Donovan is going to make that work, I don't know, because I find it tough to believe that Russell is going to be off the ball.
How good a player is Carmelo Anthony at this point in his career?
Carmelo is still a very good player. He is a bona fide scorer. And I just don't know if he's good enough to help a team win a championship. I just don't know if he is.
And do you think he can be your third? Is he your third guy?
If he would accept that role, he could be your third guy. But it's a matter of accepting that role, and I don't know if Carmelo will be willing to accept that. I mean, and I'm sure they're going to talk about it, and we're going to hear about it, and they'll say it to the media. But I think long term, I think that there will be some struggles with that.
Defensively, how do you see this team?
I see them as a decent defensive team, but they're primarily going to be an offensive team. Paul George is considered an elite defender. Russell can be when he wants to be. And, I mean, well, we know Carmelo is not known for his defense. I guess they're better defenders will be the role players off the bench. Well, you have Robertson. He will be their guy to guard the best perimeter player for the opposing team. And then you've got this guy, Grant, coming off the bench, who's a pretty good defender. But as a team, I think the main focus for Oklahoma City will be offense, and they will give up a lot of points.
So this is what's so interesting to me about this deal is I thought Oklahoma City was just terrific with what they built, because I saw this lineup of Westbrook and Robertson and George and maybe Grant and Steven Adams, and I didn't know how anyone was going to score on them. Like, I just they're switching 1 through 4. They got Adams in the middle. They're long, athletic. Robertson, I've seen NBA All-Stars quiver and wilt when they have to go up against Robertson. And I just wonder whether, I suspected that they would be 12th, 11th, 13th kind of area for offense and top three defensively in the NBA this year. Well, that's a great,
yes.
I don't know that they're still that mixed. Like, Carmelo's not even that efficient. Like, Carmelo actually doesn't, unless Carmelo's a very different player, he actually doesn't make you better offensively anymore. He just uses a lot of possessions, but they don't need a guy to use a lot of possessions.
No, I agree with you. I thought they had a good thing going considering the team that they had and what they had to throw together after Durant left. I think they performed fairly well. Defensively, they are going to, it's going to be tough. And then offensively, I have to agree with you again. Carmelo doesn't make a team better, and he's not going to make his teammates better. He could be what he's always been. And I don't want to beat up the guy because I like his offensive ability, but he can be a black hole. And it can wear on a team.
It's going to be interesting.
And coach.
yeah. Interesting to see, Scout. The one thing is they should be able to have scoring on the floor for 48 minutes, which they didn't have a year ago. I thought they'd already solved that problem, though, frankly. Their backup point guard position's better than it was a year ago. Their power forward position's better than it was a year ago, I thought, with Patrick Patterson. So I love what they had done before this move. I'm not... We'll never know, I guess, whether or not this made them any better. We'll be curious to see how good this makes them.
That's for sure.